This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and across America. I'm your host, Ben Churchwell. Today we're speaking with Larry Campbell, the Conservation Director of Friends of the Bitterroot. We'll be discussing the Sheep Creek Mine Project proposed by U.S. Critical Materials.
Larry, thank you so much for joining me today.
You bet. Happy to.
Could you first tell me a little bit about Friends of the Bitterroot? What challenges in the Bitterroot Valley led to the formation of this group?
Well, we formed, it's about 40 years ago now. Primarily, it was forest issues that brought us together. Well, actually, initially, it was the forest plan. The Bitterroot National Forest Plan is dated 1986, and there were a handful of us who independently appealed the forest plan based on various issues. And then a man named Stuart Bramborg, who was carried the Wilderness Act over the finish line when Howard Zonheiser died. Stuart was the executive director for Wilderness Society. His father was the forest supervisor in the Bitterroot. Anyway, Stuart Bramborg came back to town and, as is his usual style, got us organized. So we met together, had long discussions about bylaws and how we wanted to organize ourselves. We landed finally on basically decentralizing authority, like within Friends of the Bitterroot. We make decisions by consensus within a steering committee. We don't have really a hierarchy that gives anybody any more power than anybody else in the group to make decisions. So we try to stay non-hierarchical. And so we've been involved through those 40 years with forest issues, forest planning issues, the Rocky Mountain Lab here in Hamilton. They had a NEPA process. We weighed into that. Same on Highway 93. So we're not just a forest group. We get involved in anything that comes up that has the potential to really, you know, impact our environment here. So that's how we got started, and it's been 40 years later, we're still here.
That's impressive. You are the conservation director for the organization. Could you tell me a little bit about what work you do affiliated with the organization?
Through the years, I have been involved, well, primarily with forest issues, but in 2023, I was actually heading to the gate out to pasture when this Sheep Creek Mine proposal landed, and I just realized that I can't go now. I'm in the best position within Friends of the Bitter to actually deal with this project, having worked periodically, intermittently since 1969 as a mineral exploration geologist, which I have retired now. But in the last 3 years, it's pretty much swallowed me whole. I keep us up to date on, we're trying to protect wolverine habitat, and then various projects, water quality monitoring. We did a citizen science search for wolverine here in the Bitterroot. So that's one thing I like about being a conservation activist, is this ongoing education. There's always something new. And so whatever comes along, I try to inform myself keep the group inspired to work on those issues.
Did anything about your work before you retired as a in mineral explorations inspire you to work in conservation?
Well, yes. I mean, my dad was also a geologist, and he mapped in rural areas in Idaho, Montana, Washington. So as a family, we would live in remote cabins spring, summer, fall, and then usually go back to either Spokane, Denver, somewhere for school year. But so growing up that way really gave me an appreciation for the wild. And then in my work as an exploration geologist, I got to explore desert mountains and just love working outdoors. When the Sheep Creek Project was first became known by the public, I heard a lot of people going, oh, it's just they'll have to do years of exploration, and so what's, you know, or that it was just entirely a scam and they'll disappear. But and having seen the kind of damage that can be done through just exploration, I decided, oh, one of my first challenges was to try to inform people that, hey, you know, exploration can cause a lot of impacts. And yes, this may be a scam, and it sure looked like it in the beginning and still somewhat due to the company involved, but we can't just assume it's a scam, walk away, and then find out later that, oh, whoops, it wasn't just a scam. So we've had to treat it as though it was real. And sadly, it's kind of becoming more real, but it's also has a lot of aspects that sure look like a scam.
The Sheep Creek Project is what I specifically want to focus on today. And Friends of the Bitterroot's response to U.S. Critical Materials Plan of Operations. So just to kind of give an overview for folks who maybe aren't familiar with the project, could you tell me a bit about the Sheep Creek area and what's being proposed there?
Yes, one of the first things that when I heard about this project and saw where it was, there's no worse place in the Bitterroot for such a project. Is the location is just terrible in terms of the impacts to what's important to our way of life here in the Bitterroot, both environmentally as well as economically. I mean, it's at the very headwaters of the West Fork of the Bitterroot. Fishing, for example, is a huge part of the Bitterroot economy. It's especially the West Fork. There's a huge value to fishing here. And so having a mine at the head of the Bitterroot has the potential of ruining not just the fishing economy, but also the irrigation agriculture economy. And I mean, that would be a really bad trade, because the both fishing and agriculture, that economy is distributed across a lot of individuals and businesses here in the Bitterroot. I mean, like the recreation that it attracts, the real estate values that it adds to, it's distributed over many individuals and businesses, not like concentrated in one mining company. The fishing and agriculture are sustainable, have been demonstrated their sustainability over a long, long time. This mining would not be sustainable. That is just a really bad trade that we need to be aware of. But the the impacts to the environment from the location are primarily due to the location. It's the claim block is, like I said, right at the head of the Bitterroot. It's in designated critical bull trout habitat. There's the wildlife in that area is just remarkable. I mean, there's the namesake sheep, bighorn sheep. There's wolverine, fisher, grizzly bears are on the way. There's all moose, elk, you name it. The area is very rich in wildlife. I should add that it's above the mine, proposed mine areas above Painted Rocks Lake. And Painted Rocks Lake plays an important role here in the Bitterroot for in-stream flows. The cold water coming out from the bottom of the lake, it provides, water during low flow, but it also provides cold water to really help with the fisheries, bull trout especially. And the dam, I guess ironically, helps to create a refuge for West Slope cutthroat trout. There's pure strain West Slope cutthroat trout above Painted Rocks Dam that are protected by the fact that the dam disrupts any migration upriver by like West Slope cutthroat trout that are not pure strain, as well as competitive trout species. So it's an important refuge for trout. A big portion of the claim block lies within the Allen Mountain inventoried roadless area, which is pretty much like this anchor all along from Lost Trail Pass along the Idaho-Montana divide. There's a string of wildlands that provides for a migration corridor. Grizzly bears are on the way. I mean, that corridor serves a very important function. And this claim block intervenes in that corridor right at a bottleneck, right at a really critical spot that could be fragmented. So what happens to that migration corridor is a potential really bad impact from this mine. So that's any it would all in all, and many people that I talk to say the same thing. This mine is really an existential threat to the Bitterroot, both in terms of our recreation, wildlife conservation, as well as the economy. Just the whole way of life in the Bitterroot could be really diminished and by this mine. So there's a lot of people have gotten involved.
You had mentioned earlier that just the act of exploration can have drastic consequences. That letter that you and that your organization, along with a collection of other organizations, wrote emphasizes the USCM's plan to dispose of waste by using it off-site in gravel production or backfill. Could you tell me how similar activities with the, I believe it was the Curlew mine in Ravalli County, how that activity led to negative impacts that will also be relevant to the Sheep Creek exploration operation?
You bet. So the Curlew mine is there near Victor, and it's a historic mine that is no longer in operation. And the role it resurfaced in later years. There was water monitoring going on in the Bitterroot, and they started finding lead contamination in water samples. And it's like, wow, what's that about? And well, it turns out that the county was using, they'd go up to the Curlew mine and just take the waste from the mine and load it in dump trucks and then use it as road surfacing material or culvert backfill or whatever in various places, particularly up north in the county. And it turns out that that was the source of lead contamination in the water. So we've been forewarned about the potential impacts of like what U.S. Critical Materials is proposing. All they said is, and to be used potentially for road surfacing, culvert backfill, or whatever, but they don't, you know, they don't have a specific plan. And then they had no consideration whatever about the potential spread of contamination by that waste rock. You know, not to mention that that whole proposal of what to do with the waste is just like out of sight, out of mind. They just want to have us all just ignore it, you know, which is what they're doing. And partly, I believe it's probably they're at this point limited to stay below a 5-acre surface disturbance. So one thing that just this proposal to haul the waste just away somewhere is to just get it off of the, so it no longer is a factor in the 5-acre surface disturbance. That was just a real obvious ploy. It's like, hello, this waste is a really big factor. That's where so much of the environmental problems, pollution problems comes from, waste rock. And so that was a really lame ploy on their part. So one of the potential issues involved with this mine that is could be an immediate human health hazard is there's a mineral associated both with the ore and the wall rock. It's called actinolite. Actinolite can be asbestos. It's closely related to the tremolite that caused all the deaths and disease in Libby. And there's a lot of it up at this Sheep Creek mine site, but we don't know if it's the asbestiform of actinolite or not. So we're asking in very strong terms that the company be required to pay for an independent study of to see if asbestos is present up there, because it only takes a very small amount of asbestos to cause serious, well, fatal health issues. And it's in the dust. It's really hard to control dust. So that is an issue that we're asking them to right away. I mean, I don't understand why they haven't done this yet, but at any rate, that the presence or not of asbestos is a really critical human health concern up at that mine site.
Following a public meeting in December at the Hamilton Fairgrounds, there was an effort to remove the project from Fast 41, which is a list of federal projects to be expedited. Do you know if this effort was successful?
No, it's on Fast 41. I mean, I stood up and spoke at that meeting, and my first thing I said is, I'm all in favor of getting this project off of Fast 41, but first, I want to thank U.S. Critical Materials for putting it on Fast 41, because in the prior almost 3 years of trying to activate Bitterrooters to get involved, we had a certain amount of success, but nothing like what U.S. Critical Materials accomplished when they put it on Fast 41. that brought people out of the woodwork. There was a heck of a, there were like about 700 people at that meeting, and nobody except the two representatives of U.S. Critical Materials spoke in favor of the mine. And I mean, even our three quite conservative county commissioners decided on the spot to ask for it to be taken off of Fast 41. Our congressional delegation made some really lame statements about how their concern was transparency and the fact that U.S. Critical Materials had not engaged with the community. That was a smokescreen behind which they then, our congressional delegation is in favor of the mine. But as long as U.S. Critical Materials does a better job of informing the community, and so we feel abandoned by our congressional delegation. Hopefully, our county commissioners will decide that they're opposed to the mine, in addition to they're already come out opposed to the Fast 41 listing. This Fast 41, on average, projects listed on Fast 41 are permitted about 18 months faster than mining projects not on that list. Permitting mines has become quite expedited in recent years, even beyond Fast 41. So the idea of just doing a superficial job on the analysis of impacts from this mine does not set well with people living in the valley. We want them to look very thoroughly, leave no stone unturned in terms of analyzing the impacts of this mine. So Fast 41 is the antithesis of that, but we're still on the Fast 41 list.
What's next for the fight against the Sheep Creek project?
Well, good question. It's like it just never ceases to amaze me when I'll get close to what I think is like, okay, there's going to be a little interlude in the action. I can take a break, go skiing, do whatever. And son of a gun, something crops up. So, but on the official Fast 41 website, they, well, first of all, they're at this point just doing an EA, an environmental analysis, which is a short and more superficial version of NEPA analysis than the EIS. We're asking, we want them to do it, a full-on EIS. And so, but on about March, about the third week of March, in theory, they will disclose an official plan of operation and open up the official scoping. And part of NEPA process is what they call scoping, which is simply that where citizens can add, they can state what their concerns are and ask that that concern be considered in the analysis. And that will be the first official opportunity for citizens to get involved. We decided as soon as we learned about this project is not to wait to be invited to offer our comments. So we've done, like 2 years ago, we had a 17 group sign on to what I called pre-scoping comments, just to get it on record. We want this to be in the record because this expedited process could move so quickly, and it may happen, as it often does, over, Christmas holiday or something, when you got other things to do, and all of a sudden you have to respond really quickly to a complicated proposal. So we just decided early on, we got to start getting our concerns on the record at the West Fork Ranger Station as the official repository for these comments. So So at any rate, third week in March, we're supposed to see. Right now, that letter concerns a plan of initial plan of operations submitted by the mining company to the Forest Service. So right now, behind closed doors, only we slipped our comments over the transom through the closed door. Behind closed doors, they are identifying deficiencies. That is, the Forest Service is alerting the mining company that, whoa, well, you need to think about this and that and the other thing. And we notice that you're just ignoring what to do with the waste and other such deficiencies. And hopefully, the Forest Service, we ask them to just totally reject the mining plan, which is what it is. It's not, they portray it as exploration and bulk sampling plan. It's a mining plan and goes far beyond exploration. And so what we're hoping is that the Forest Service completely rejects that plan and requires an EIS instead of an EA. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think it's March 23rd. But meanwhile, people, we haven't waited for that official invitation to get involved with scoping, official NEPA scoping, and neither should other people. Anybody that is concerned can offer comments at any time to the West Fork Ranger District. And ask, I would specifically ask that this be put on the record, and considered when you do the EIS. Please consider this issue, because it means a lot to me, or whatever. So at any rate, the next official kind of fire drill is going to be the scoping. Opportunity for public scoping. And there's no telling the way things go, these opportunities for public comment are getting made shorter and shorter. So it could be a very short time. But it's an opportunity for people to offer their comments.
Well, Larry, that's about all the questions I have and about all the time that we have. So thank you very much for sharing a bit about this issue and about some of the work that Friends of Bitterroot is doing. And thank you for joining me today.
You bet. And if people want to find out more, they can go to friendsofthebitterroot.net. It's like all one word, Friends of the Bitterroot, all run together. And there's a bunch, we created a reference library to help inform people.
Perfect. Well, people should definitely check that out.
Great. Well, thank you, Ben.
Thank you, and have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. More information about the association and its activities can be found on its website, www.gallatinwildlife.org. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or to buzzsprout.com and scroll down to Wilderness and Wildlife. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Ben Churchwell.